Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Illinois House Republican Leader Jim Durkin from Western Springs. Leader Durkin, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Rick. Glad to be here.
Sorry to give you that lead-in with Patty Blagojevich, but interesting times that we live in these days.
Oh, boy, aren't they?
And you were one of the lead prosecutors, as it were, in the impeachment.
That's correct.
I don't want to go there.
Why not? Everybody else has.
Well, I don't. I mean, your thoughts were that he should not get any commutation.
No, absolutely not. You know what? We have a court system in place. You may not be happy with the verdict or the sentence, but we have multiple layers of appeals between the appellate court, the U.S. Supreme Court, back down to the circuit court for habeas petitions. There are so many ways in which an aggrieved defendant can challenge their conviction and sentence, and he has lost at every stage. We need to respect the system.
Twice before the Supreme Court of the United States.
I can't even count it, but we need to respect the system, and I hope that the president does not commute the sentence. I think it sends the wrong message about what our federal government, the president, believe about corruption. And I was caught off guard the other day when I heard those comments. So, but this case has been thoroughly vetted by so many different courts, and I really hope that, again, the president will walk back his thoughts and ensure that the court systems will be, no one's going to challenge their integrity when we need to have some separation of powers, but I think that this goes too far.
As you said, you were caught off guard when you were asked about this the other day, because there were other things going on in Springfield then, like trying to get a budget through, and which, as I've been saying throughout the morning, it's kind of in a normal situation, a budget is certainly an achievement, but it's an expected achievement, and this was, in some respects, an unexpected achievement.
Yes, I had a feeling within about a week and a half out that this was for real, but I was very guarded with I wouldn't say optimism, but I thought that we can conclude with a negotiated budget within the time in which we are supposed to get this stuff done at the end of May. History has shown over the past few years that we shouldn't be so optimistic. So, it was a lot
of... When you said guarded, what do you mean? You didn't... Something might slip out.
Absolutely. There's a poison pill that is thrown in at the end. And, you know, the relationship between the governor and the speaker, it's not good. And it's the legislature who drives the budget. We're the ones that craft it. We're the ones who present it to the governor. And the speaker, you know, he can be very creative at times. And crafty also.
That's an interesting use of terms there. But
guarded.
Well, but this seemed to be also, I think, a reflection that nobody wanted to go through the impasse.
Absolutely. All of us were drained. Our constituents are just so sick and tired of the bickering, the fighting. Even the staunches of conservatives that I know in my neighborhood are like, will you guys just please get this done? Put your partisan politics aside. And, you know, you have plenty of time over the summer and the fall to go at each other, but don't let the state go down this road anymore. And I will say that what drove this budget was the pressure within the caucuses, the rank and file members who are not going to put up with another impasse. And I've heard that once. I heard it, you know, 50 times. I'm one of 51, so I hear it 50 times. And I think that that's what motivated the speaker and the president to engage Republicans, truly engage us in an open manner for the first time in a long time.
Well, and this was the first time that Republicans voted for a budget in a long time.
I can't recall the last time I voted for a budget. It may have been back under George Ryan.
That's kind of what I was thinking
it
of
was,
back
yeah,
then.
Yeah. So I think we got over 90 votes in the House, and I just showed you how
things can get done.
Can get done, but I think people were just starving for that opportunity to vote for a budget and say, look, it's not perfect. But you know what? We actually negotiated something. It's a compromise. It's not a bad thing. It's not a dirty word. But we compromised where nobody gets everything they want, but you know what? Everybody gets something. And the state's going to operate, and we're going to continue on for a full year without having the calamity or the uncertainty with institutions and people who rely upon the state.
You've heard some critics, though, that, oh, well, those lawmakers, they shouldn't be patting themselves on the back for this, that there's...
Who's patting themselves on the back? I'm not. I think that we did our job for the first time. I think it's good that we actually got this done. It's a framework for us. If the Democrats want to engage us on major issues down the road, there's a way to do it. We did this twice in the last year. We did it with education funding reform last summer, and we did it with the budget this year. I'm not gloating. What we did is what our constituents expect us to do, and nothing more. So I don't think that we should be having the USC marching band shouldn't be coming in and giving us a big parade. This is what our responsibilities are every year we walk into that building. We did it. We got it done. But we can't allow the past to continue and to infiltrate our thinking when we get into the month of May.
Do you truly think that this does, in some respects, signal some kind of a new change in dynamics in the General Assembly?
Oh, I think so. I think like I said earlier, a lot of this was driven by the rank and file members who have grown frustrated, with the process or their lack of input, or just maybe the personalities who got into the way of crafting a budget. So I will say that this is a new era in Springfield, that the powers to be may have lost a little bit of their power because their members were pushing them and saying, you better get this done, otherwise there'll be consequences.
And along with that, it would seem, and I know I'm not asking you to speak for the governor, but there was that realization on the second floor as well.
I think so, too. And I know that at least from my perspective, that the governor could have been in a very difficult situation. But the governor was, if we didn't walk out of Springfield with presenting him a budget that was within his very, I would say, modest request, no new taxes, balanced. And we did that. But the governor going into the summer without having a budget that's been negotiated, I don't think anybody wins. It's going to be a public, as I say, a pox on that whole building.
And I was going to say, I don't know that you could parse it into partisanship at that point. It's just everybody, it would just be throw everybody.
Thought through so many scenarios in the beginning of May if this was going to fall apart, of who is going to wear the collar for it. And at the end of the day, all of us would. And we're walking into an election season. You have to be mindful of that. But we're better off as a state not having to worry about this. It'll be addressed this week by the governor, and then we can get into the fun stuff of campaigns.
Well, I want to ask you just what you just said. It's going to be addressed by the governor supposedly tomorrow. There's an event tomorrow morning. The governor in a statement said he would act quickly, but are we assured that he's going to sign this in its entirety?
The governor will sign the budget bill and the budget implementation bill. There's two bills that are...
Yes. Well, the BIMP bill is known in Springfield. The lovely BIMP.
He will sign both.
Okay. So we have that assurance.
Yes.
We're speaking with Illinois House Republican leader Jim Durkin from Western Springs. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Joining me here in the studio is Illinois House Republican Leader Jim Durkin. We're talking about the legislative session adjournment on time, the fact that we got a budget agreement on time, and just kind of a general change in atmosphere. In my Sunday story, I noted that only in Illinois politics would it take a contentious election year to bring at least a dose of normalcy to state government.
Well,
there's something ironic in that.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Rick. Yeah, of course. You know, a lot of people are going to be, some of them have real challenges in November, other ones don't have real challenges, but, you know, I don't think that anybody should take their seat for granted. No one expected that Donald Trump would have won 2 years ago. This is a very, very fickle electorate and
volatile,
fickle, you name it. So anything can happen next November. And I warn my members, particularly those I've been saying, particularly the ones who think that they've got an easy election next November, get out there quick and be everywhere in your district. Don't take anything for granted because things can change quickly and you can be out of a job.
And sometimes not even by your own doing.
Exactly. There's going to be a national, this is going to be a combination of where the people of Illinois are at with Springfield, and I think 50 other, that's half of it. The other half is going to be what's happening in Washington, which is going to trickle down to the state level.
So as state legislators, how do you, as Republican state legislators, how do you address maybe concerns on the national level?
You know, that's interesting. It depends on the region.
It certainly does.
In downstate Illinois, I would say from particularly south of Bloomington, central Illinois, it's a very strong Donald Trump area.
South of I-80.
Maybe even further north. Maybe even that far north. Far north, yeah. He has a strong following. I think his different approach towards government, his kind of like, I'm against the machine.
I'm against everything.
I'm against everything. And you know what? The DOJ and the FBI are running amok, and I'm going to start commuting sentences. I'm going to start pardoning people as my way of showing that, you know what, my disdain for that institution. I think that in the suburbs, it's a different perspective. I live in the suburbs, and I don't think that Donald Trump's numbers are very strong in Western Springs or LaGrange, where in my area. But you've got to be able to finesse the national and the state issues. But at the end of the day, everything's local. That's what I think. I've been told that from day one, that all politics are local. So, you know, be present, and you got to be able to get out there and explain exactly what you did.
Well, and speaking of this kind of regionalism, one of the things that I thought that helped move a budget agreement was the fact that for downstate legislators, a lot of Republicans that have state institutions in their districts or state workers that work at these institutions, higher ed, prison, whatever, that was a kind of a stabilizing factor too.
That was an easier sell. Those members in downstate Illinois, those who do have those corrections, they have two or three penitentiaries in their district and other, you know, human service parts of Department of Human
Public
Services,
Health.
Public Health. Of course, those are their neighbors. And there's a great amount of those in those areas. Those state is probably the largest employer in a lot of those counties and those regions. So those were the easy sells. I didn't think we'd hit 90 votes, but as we started getting close to the day of the vote, we started talking more and more to our members about this is what, in our perspective, it's balanced. We haven't done that in a long time. It is not relying upon new taxes. And that's all they wanted to hear. But that's what the governor set out about 2 months ago when he sent a letter to the four leaders. He said, I want a balanced budget with no new taxes. That's it. No other conditions.
Now, one of the things I raised in speaking to Brian Mackey from Public Radio early this morning was about that the governor, has been very critical of that tax increase that was approved a year ago. But now that's built in and baked into the budget. And in my Sunday story, I kind of think that the graduated income tax proposal that's backed by Democrats is now the new boogeyman because you can't. Well, the candidates, J.B. Pritzker, other Democrats, won't say what the rates should be. But it's also a constitutional amendment. You don't want to enshrine rates in a constitution.
Well, they should give us at least an idea of what state that they are looking to match. Now, I was at the hearing at the Blahnik Building a month and a half ago, and I asked the Democrat majority leader specifically about what the rates that she would envision, what are the right rates for Illinois under her perspective. No one wants to talk about it. J.B. Pritzker doesn't want to talk about it. But just remember, J.B. Pritzker said we need to raise the current level before we even get to the change in the Constitution. So the Democrats raised taxes last year on families and also businesses. J.B. Pritzker, the billionaire, wants to raise taxes again while he's working on changing the Constitution and then having some type of what he calls a progressive tax system. But one state, we've mentioned a number of states that are very similar to Illinois, and under those states' system of their progressive tax, the middle class does not work out well. Yes, the higher bracket, higher earners do get taxed significantly, but people who are making anywhere from $50,000 to $80,000 a year are paying up to 7 or 8%. So there's nothing fair about that.
Well, but what though, if everybody, as I even spoke with Representative Martwick earlier, and of course he had proposed kind of a end-all be-all proposal, which you Republicans take great delight in poking at.
Not me.
But in that proposal, though, was an example of how this could also provide a great deal of property tax relief, which is something that everybody in the state wants to see.
Well, we can do property tax relief independent of that. We've been pushing, myself, the governor, and also Republicans have been pushing for the past 3 years, property tax relief. The House passes their version, the Senate passes their version. Nothing becomes law, nothing gets sent to the governor, but, you know, everybody says that I passed property tax relief, so it's just part of the Springfield smoke and mirrors game.
But for true property tax relief, though, given that the bulk of the money and property taxes are being spent on schools, you have to, I mean, there would have to be a cost shift. There would have to be a burden shift.
There would be, but...
And ideally, that's kind of what the new education funding formula eventually is supposed to help offset.
It is. It's supposed to offset, but if we continue down this road without giving at least an option to local taxpayers to be able to determine their fate with their property taxes, we're going to continue with this exodus out of the state. Right now, it's, you know, they're paying a lot in their individual taxes, but their property tax bill is just getting worse. And I can tell you that. I look at my property tax bills, and I just got my appeal was just rejected by the county. So
you don't know what guy?
No, absolutely not. That's the last thing I'm going to do is call a guy. No, it won't happen.
But I mean, I think we are at that point where it's the property tax system is just so besides the flaws that have been outlined in Cook County, but just the fairness of, as I've said for a long time, the fairness of relying on a 17th century form of wealth, agrarian wealth, to as a funding mechanism. I just tend to think our whole taxation system is not modernized with the times.
No, it hasn't been. It's mainly driven by politics of Springfield and also out of City Hall and the county building. And you dip your toe into that water, and you determine whether or not...
Whether your toe still can come out of it.
Yes, exactly. But it can't be a third rail, because every time you jump into it, there's no one is satisfied, and it just brings out the worst in people. So I'm hopeful that I'm reelected, and that we can address this matter with Governor Rauner in his second term and actually provide a realistic... form of property tax relief, not the nonsense that we've seen over the years. But you know what? I think it's got to be citizen driven. I think it's important that there'll be referendum questions that'll be placed that are realistic. If the citizens of Illinois want property tax relief, we want to give them that ability to do it. And to me, that's the way you do it, is like letting the local property taxpayers make a decision whether or not they need to cut from their schools, their park district, or libraries. And to me, that's citizen empowerment, and that's what good government's about.
And now the campaign goes on. Correct?
Yes. That's what I understand. But you know what? That's fine. I'd rather be involved with the campaign as opposed to my time in Springfield, where I often think of myself as a unlicensed psychiatrist, usually during the month of May.
I can only imagine. That's Illinois House Republican leader Jim Durkin from Western Springs.